guys, welcome to this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. In today's show, I'm talking with Dan Harmon. Dan's the creator and mastermind of the brilliant Community. I love that show. I talked to Dan at WonderCon about the dark side of season 3, the mystery of the jump in ratings, and if he thinks there'll be a season 4. Hint, yes. Hey guys, I really appreciate it when you support the advertisers because every little click, yes, it does help. Don't forget that we also sell agent mailing labels and casting director ones too. And we have a bunch of other cool services available. You can check everything out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Dan.
So, is there any meaning behind Chevy's ranking of wives this week? Because I've read like 58 different theories, and as far as I know, there's nothing.
I guess I get why. I think I know why that's happening. It's because it's sort of a weak punchline in the comedic sense. Because the only punchline is just that Abed rattles them off. But it's not. No, there is no significance. I've seen the theory online that it corresponds to the timelines in the timeline episode, and that you can glean which one is real or something like that from that. No, I'm not. I just don't put that much energy into stuff like that. But I bring that stuff on myself when I do stuff like that Beetlejuice thing, and I understand.
I'm very fascinated by your embryo approach. And I was wondering, I know you do embryo per episode, but is there an embryo for the whole season for each character as well? And if so, like...
This year there was. Yeah. That was the experiment this year. I don't know if it paid dividends compared to the, second season. I'll take stock at the end of everything. The experiment at the beginning of this season, and part of it was motivated by politics because there was a new chairman coming in at NBC, and he didn't know whether or not he was going to keep the show around, so I had to sit down with him and pitch him an entire season of Community at the top of the year. And the way I did that, I had to get the show off of their weirdness radar too. So I had to make it sound like the show was going to be about people, and that there was a plan, and that anything I could do to make them feel comfortable politically. And I also had watched The Wire between seasons 2 and 3, and was like, I think that the things that people are complaining about the show from the second season is that it's, whereas I come from the Channel 101 world, so I look at modularity of episodes as being a superior craftsmanship. If anyone can pick one pearl off the necklace and enjoy it, then that's better than serialization, which I think is a crutch and it's just the first thing you grab when you're drowning. I didn't see the audience perceiving it that way. I just saw people going, "It's inconsistent. Every episode's different. It's like a sketch show." That's why it'll never get over this rating and stuff. So it's like, okay, let's test that theory. Let's do a show. Let's create these arcs, like Chang's rise to power and things like that you'll see unfolding, and let's step them out. So I did for each character has a circle this year. Some of them fell to the wayside. Once we got pulled off the air, everything went to hell. Like as far as plans and stuff, I was like, well, if you guys aren't gonna follow through with your story of us being on the air, I'm certainly not gonna do the episode about the guy meeting his father or whatever. Screw it. And then we started doing weird stuff. But and I think fourth season, when we get a fourth season, I'm going to go back to a season 2 approach, which is to follow my bliss, follow the writer's laughter, and not be afraid to change things at the drop of a hat. Like, always look at the episodes as a whole before writing the next one, like being 6 episodes ahead of the audience, but no more than that. That's just my feeling right now.
You're saying 4 seasons, are you confident in 4?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll get at least half of a fourth season, because now with the Comedy Central deal, and this is outside my jurisdiction, I'm not a businessman, but from what I understand of television, when you've got a third season sitcom that's generating revenue per episode, then it's the practical decision to bring it back for enough episodes to make it syndicatable on a larger scale, which it will be at 88 episodes, that would be fourth season pickup for 13. I think that's the smart thing to do. That being said, if we lay a fart next week, if we get a 0.2 rating of it. So, you know, you can't. Everything's a coin toss. That could happen too.
The show is on a grand scale sometimes, like the paintball episode, and then it's also Seinfeldian in a way in which it's very intimate. How do you know when it's time to put him back in the room around the table?
I assume by default that's what the show should be, is them around the table being people, and then I know that no matter how much I resist it, and no matter how much pressure is put on me from above, and no matter what I try to do, those other ones will happen. So it's sort of like, how do you decide how much chocolate cake you're going to eat? The answer is, you try as hard as you can to eat nothing but coleslaw, and you know that you'll eat an average of one chocolate cake a week. And then you have weird pig outs when you get depressed, and you wake up with chocolate all over your face and crying.
Can you talk about the ups and downside of having such a vocal fan base?
The only downside is that I can see is that factor where I know as a TV viewer that that I don't like people telling me what to do. So that's what evangelizing fans do. They're out there doing their work. I suppose there's people that they're pushing away, but that's like saying that the downside of eating salad is that you're wearing your teeth down. I mean, it's like that you have to choose something to eat it. We have to have people out there telling people to watch the show. So that's not really a downside. It's the only downside you'll see, like people writing about this. But that's just them expressing their individuality and going like, "Oh, I'm not going to watch this show because I don't like the vociferous fan base." I think we all remember the Chuck thing unfolding where it was like they literally, the fans saved the show and owned it, like they had a piece of it, and then we sort of watched in some bemusement and some horror as like that same animal started to go, "Oh, we don't like the storyline you're doing now." And it's like, what do you do as a creator when the people that saved your show start saying that stuff? And I don't ever want to be in that position, not because I'm arrogant or megalomaniacal, but because I know that that's not what the audience wants. You don't get on a roller coaster and have a steering wheel put in your hand. If you do, it's a fake one, like the Indiana Jones ride that stops working. Oh my God, that's part of the ride. Like, the audience wants to be voyeuristic, and they want to believe the people are real, and they love being able to say what they like to other fans and even me. But there's a difference between that and the other end of the spectrum, which is some improv show where you're asking for suggestions and then going, "Okay, this episode's going to be about a teacup and a plumber." No one wants to watch that. They wouldn't feel like they were watching something.
It could be a misery theme.
Jump, where was it, the fans or the people who like it? Oh, it's back on. I mean, obviously everybody's analyzing those numbers.
Right.
Do you have any
theories about why they went up?
Yeah.
I think it was probably like 8 different things. I think that Joel McHale was out there like crazy. I saw more Joel McHale that week than I'd ever seen, and he's on my show. I think obviously the foundational one is like the cardiac arrest of your dad makes you remember your dad more. Like, you remember every fishing trip, and then you're at the hospital when visiting hours start, you know, after he's out of surgery. So like, you're not going to be late for that. Everyone who was going to watch our show for the next 12 weeks watched it that night. So that's a huge factor. The Hulu banking of episodes, the sale of our 60 episode like body of work to a library where you can click on it during the hiatus and catch up on it, and also evangelize it by emailing that link to other people. I think that was a huge thing. That was a lot like how iTunes helped The Office turn their numbers around, and how DVD sales helped Arrested Development, and there was the Family Guy thing. With us, I think it's Hulu. I think that's in the post-TV era. Our story is going to have a lot to do with Hulu. But you know, we can theorize all we want. Also, Big Bang Theory was a repeat. It was not. It was a basketball. So, as Andy Bobrow said, we took their nerds. which that could be it right there. That could be the whole thing.
Academy Award winner Jim Rash.
yeah, there was Jim Rash winning an Oscar. 30 million people watched the Oscars. If a handful of them were found out about our show because of that.
Speaking of Hulu, you did a great animated series on Hulu, a series of animated shorts. Is that something that you're looking to explore to help expand the storytelling opportunities for community?
I'd love to be able to do something large scale that could be canon and somehow add to the whole universe. That was more, I mean, that animated series, that three-part thing was more of a, that's just Sony doing what they do well, which is being a big machine and keeping things going. Like they didn't want us to go dark for too long, so they made a deal with two of my trusted elves, Dave Seeger and Tom Kaufman, to kind of produce those things and keep a community presence out there. But I would love to do something like that in the future that actually for fans and non-fans could be a whole different thing. I'd love to do a comic book. I'd love to do a video game. Just because I think that's what storytelling should be in the modern era. You should Cheers should be a lunchbox and a board game and a show. If it's good.
When we see more of Inspector Space Time, I think we all want to know.
Yeah, we'll continue to see them. I sort of like there was an aborted experiment there where I thought what I was going to do is plant that seed and let the fans respond, and then do an unprecedented thing where the way the fans responded, which I felt like they would do what they did, which is to start making up their own mythology. And my plan was to take pieces of that fan-made mythology and make them canon, and that so that it was like the Close Encounters, like tones going back and forth, that there would be a connection between the audience, that they would go, I think Itchy and Scratchy started here and did this episode. And sometimes I would go, yes, that's true, that's very true, and prove it with an episode, you know, mentioning yes he did have a companion named Genevieve or something like that, and let the fans go like, oh my god. Unfortunately, that's a legal mess. The fact that it's a one-off of an existing show, a takeoff of an existing show, combined with the fact that the fans are out there making stuff up, that tends to be a one-for-one sort of analog to that to that other thing that we're referencing. That made that experiment not be able to go any further. Some poor guy at Sony had to get the job of watching Doctor Who obsessively, and so there's a filter that it goes through that has to keep us protected. But Inspector Space Time will remain a kind of Itchy and Scratchy within the universe that makes an interesting way of examining Troy and Abed's relationship.
Can you talk about what else is coming up?
Sorry, guys, that was the last question. I got it taken.
Okay. Well, let's. I don't want him to get blue questions. what was the question?
Just what's coming up? A couple of episodes.
Oh, like tease, like stuff that's happening. We've got that. I mean, I'll tell you, the stuff that I've seen already leaked is, you know, there's another Pillow Fort episode that sort of erupts into a kind of civil war. There's the episode I wait with bated breath to see people's reaction to is the Abed and Annie Dreamatorium episode. They spend most of the episode in the Dreamatorium, running simulations. There's a Law and Order episode, and there's a video game episode that I'm supposed to be writing right now, that where they're all in a video game, like kind of a 16-bit platform game, for most of the episode. That'll be interesting to see if we can pull that off too.
Is that 322? I keep seeing.
Yes, that's 322 because it's the only thing that's possible for me to put off this long because it's just the actors doing voiceover because it's animated. So it's what you've seen for the last 3 weeks is me procrastinating. Like I should have. It's terrible what I do. It's awful. I'm a bad person.
Thanks, Dan, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.